columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
Sports Radio 1043 The Fan presents The Drive with a Top 6 at 6.
How about 6? 6 is good.
Tyler, the stars at night are big and bright. Deep in the heart of
Texas?
Texas governor says that when the sports comes back, Governor Greg Abbott says, yeah, fans, sure, why not? Filling up about maybe 25% capacity. Wow. Do you think other governors of other states will follow suit? And we really will see fans in attendance at sporting events when it comes back.
Really good question. Arizona was the first state to open up, and they just said, look, we're open for business. Any professional teams that are out there, if you need a place to play, come on out to Arizona. We're open. Anybody can play here very quickly. I mean, within a day or two, Florida opens up for business. And then it kind of just started having a trickle-down effect. Will this one have the exact same effect? I don't think it will be quite as powerful. I don't think that it's going to happen quite as quickly. When you talk about how are the governors politically aligned of each individual state, right? And if they feel like they don't want to be left behind and they've got similar beliefs to Texas, well, yeah, I think that we will see other states open for business here. I don't know if this necessarily means we're going to have fans in the stands, D-Mac, but I feel like the momentum is brewing towards that.
I think so, too. I think one state will follow others. I think the economic impact is obviously a big deal on everybody. And I think the new normal, I believe the new normal will be about what degree of risk do you find worthy. And things will open up, and individuals will have to make their own decisions on things. I guess my next question to you would be, I'm kind of, glomming on here, my first thing, but my other question to you would be, would you go to a sporting event if you knew only 25% capacity was going to be there? Would you go?
Well, would I personally go? Yes. That doesn't mean that I judge anybody that would feel differently. I certainly have absolutely no judgments whatsoever towards anybody that feels like they are uncomfortable in a situation. There's a lot of people that are uncomfortable going to the grocery store still. There's a lot of people uncomfortable with all of it. I don't blame you. I don't judge you. But me personally, yes, I'm ready to get back towards my life.
All right, bring it, Kevin.
D-Mac, this battle between Major League Baseball and the players, it's getting pretty ugly, man. It really is. It's been not looking good for a long time, and it's looking even worse right now is the best way to say it. Max Scherzer of the Nationals pretty much laid down the law last night when he put out a pretty well-worded tweet in which he says, hey, man, we're not going to engage with MLB any longer. We've already given a discount. Now you're asking us to take a second discount. This is a bunch of nonsense. No way, no how. We're done. We're not doing this. Open up your books or else we're not having any further conversations. Man, what is the temperature really at, D-Mac? What's your belief that baseball is going to be played this year?
I think the owners tried to get away with something, and they failed miserably. And I think they thought that Blake Snell and his approach would be such a turnoff. I think the owners have way overplayed their hand. So that's where I think it stands. So I don't think it's dead. But certainly it will never happen if the owners stick to that proposal. I mean, it will not happen. So I think the concept will go closer to the initial prorated agreement for 100 games. I think you'll see doubleheaders, and I think you'll see a longer season. I think the players will have to, you know, be willing to do all those things.
Well, they are. They said they're willing to play more games.
Well, there you go. And you know what? With Texas doing what they're doing, if they're going to be hub cities, then I guess if there's hub cities where fans can be there, it could defray the cost. So I think it still will happen. But if it doesn't happen, I wouldn't be shocked. But it definitely won't happen the way the owners just laid it out. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think it's really going to come down to how many owners are really going to lose money this season. And we don't know the answer to that because the books are not opened up.
That's right.
But how many of them really are there? Are there 10? Are there 12? Are there more? Are there less? I don't know. But if there's a handful or more of owners that are legitimately going to lose a significant amount of money this year, well, they're not going to be very motivated to come to an agreement here. They'd be better served just sitting the season out in their minds, but that would be a huge mistake. America would never forgive them. And, you know, I just got to believe, I have to believe that logic is going to win out here, and in some way, somehow, they come to an agreement.
Ring it, Kevin. Football owners say no to the 4th-and-15 thing. They say no to the sky judge. They say yes to three guys on IR instead of two. They say defensive player, okay, kick returners, you can be ruled a defenseless player. We're going to protect you a little bit. Highs and lows of these decisions. Tyler, what do you think?
Well, I'm a traditionalist. I certainly understand people that do not like change to the sport. They just want to watch what they're accustomed to. They don't want to have to learn a whole bunch of new stuff. When I watched the XFL, I turned it on and I had to be educated for 45 minutes before I had any clue what was happening. That wasn't really cool. That wasn't really fun for me. But this didn't really feel like that big of a change to go ahead and give an option. By the way, just an option for people to have an alternative to the onside kick. You could go for it from 4th-and-15. Okay, well, that felt like it was smart on multiple different levels. It makes the game safer. It gives you an option to not run the most dangerous play in all of football. And it also allows you, when the game is on the line, to put your trust in football rather than the ball bouncing your right way. So did they miss an opportunity here on that one big time? The sky judge one, I knew that was never going to happen. NFL is all about lack of transparency. Way too much transparency going on in that one. But there is no safety net the way it is right now if there is a game-changing play, and that's a mistake to not have any safety net.
I think they blew it with the two, with the 4th-and-15 and the sky judge. There was ways to make the game better and more interesting, and they didn't. It's not gone forever necessarily, but don't come crying to me when there's a play out there that impacts the Saints like it impacted the Saints or another team. I mean, you put yourself in that situation, and we'll just watch these dumb kickoffs and just shake our heads at all the stupid onside kicks. Ring it, Kevin.
How about this, T-Bac? Matt LaFleur. He's had a couple comments here recently. One of them was
your friend Matt LaFleur.
My friend Matt LaFleur.
Your close friend who is
whom I honestly respect tremendously.
Oh, I was going to ask if he's gotten back to you from the text that you sent him.
No, never got back to me on that
one.
No,
never did, huh?
Okay. Never got back to me on that
one.
So
I'm talking to Kyle Sloter just during the show, you know, behind the scenes, and you don't even hear from your pal Matt.
Congrats. You got an unemployed backup QB to respond to you on Twitter. Congratulations. I'm really proud of you.
Oh, that's good.
Matt is a buddy of mine, but boy, I can't say I understand how he was approaching this offseason. He said that Jordan Love was selected because there were guys that they targeted that were selected above him, and he was simply the best player. There's one for you, and then how about this one? This one is the one that really caught my attention.
Yeah.
It's not fun making fun of your friends, T-Mac, but
I understand.
How about this one? He says, it was just one of those situations. Oh, excuse me. Dang it. That's the wrong one. He says they've got to get more explosive offensively. And to get more explosive offensively, that begins with play calling. They didn't take very many shots down the field. They didn't take many chances. But they got to get more explosive, get more chunk yardage. Huh? Wait, hold on. You need to get more explosive, but you didn't give your Pro Bowl Hall of Fame quarterback any more options to get more explosive?
Correct.
What's going on?
It's a stupid, dumb... This has been... Boy, you're sucking me in, because this is in the heart of my Glennon Trubisky doctrine, the khaki pants quarterback thing. Don't take quarterbacks in the 20s. I mean, you're sucking me right into it. It's a... I won't go too deep. I'll just say it was stupid when it happened. We said it was stupid exactly the moment it happened when we were doing our draft coverage. We said how dumb it was, and now he puts out a quote. He was the next best available player on the board.
Just the best available.
What are you, nuts? It's a quarterback situation.
Man, talk about going auto draft.
If he's telling the truth, he better be lying. He better be lying. Because if he's not lying, he's too dumb to be coaching an NFL football team.
Well, he didn't make the selection. In his defense, it was the GM. Of course, he gave his approval, but the real selection was the GM's.
Well, if he believes that people fib to the press all the time, so I'll give him the benefit of the doubt that he's not that stupid and that there's a bigger plan there. It's a bad plan. It's a really bad plan, but to just take the quarterback... Because you had your eyes on... So you're actually... This is mind-boggling to me. You're evaluating a quarterback on the same level as a what? As a wide receiver, a pass rusher, as a cornerback? You're evaluating the quarterback like that?
Well, it is the most important position on a football team, D-Mac.
Well, that's right. And it's so dumb to say... He's the... Oh, my Lord.
Nothing made sense about that selection. Absolutely.
If you really loved... If you loved love, you would have moved up to get him. You wouldn't have just sat there while every single other team that could want a quarterback passes on him. That is just... Well,
so, well, technically, he said that there were other players that they wanted more, so they weren't targeting him necessarily. I don't believe that, but...
Well, yeah, who did you... let's just take a quarterback at what? What number was it?
Well, he didn't respond to me. I don't know.
It's just dumb. It's so dumb, and they have been the Packers have been crushed for their draft. It's not just us. I mean, I can't find anybody who thinks it was a good idea.
I haven't come across that person yet either.
All right, ring it, Kevin. See you getting fired up.
No, good for you. I love when you get fired up.
DeAndre Hopkins thinks he's the best wide receiver in football. Quote, I definitely think I'm the best. I know I'm the best. Mike's my boy, Michael Thomas, but he knows if I had Drew Brees my whole career, what these numbers would be.
Ooh, shots fired.
Julio Jones know if I had Matt Ryan my whole career, that's my boy. I train with Julio. He knows what these numbers would be. Wow! Whoa!
Yikes!
You're throwing Deshaun Watson under the bus right now?
Boy, I mean, that's...
Who else has been a quarterback for DeAndre Hopkins?
I cannot argue with the fact that he easily is in the conversation for the best wide receiver in the league. You put any of those three up against each other, and I don't care. Pick your poison. They're all the best. I don't know. I don't think it's ever a good idea to dog your former quarterback.
Damn,
I don't know why it's necessary. Okay.
Don't get me wrong. He's ripping Deshaun Watson, right?
Oh, of course he is. Absolutely he is.
Man. If I
had a quarterback that could throw me the football, I would have the best numbers in the world.
Wow. What's your take on that?
Bold move, Cotton.
Ring it, Kevin.
T-Mac, there is an ESPN writer that has predicted Drew Lock is a dark horse candidate to win the MVP this year. Whoa. Okay.
Of what? Of the Broncos?
Of the National Football League?
Oh, of the National Football League.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, correct.
Okay, it's a dark horse pick. Okay.
Dark horse pick to win the MVP. Okay. What are your realistic expectations for Drew Lock this year?
Well... We saw what happened with Patrick Mahomes in his second year, didn't we? I mean, it was pretty special.
Well, it was really his first year, but yeah.
Well, but similar to Drew Lock.
Right. I mean, Patrick Mahomes played in one game. Drew Lock played in five.
Yeah, but it was the same trajectory, theoretically, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
So, I mean, on that level, you know, Drew Lock's had more experience than Patrick Mahomes coming into his second year. Listen, I'm not expecting him to be Patrick Mahomes. But don't tell me that guys in their second year of play haven't had incredible years. We certainly saw it with Patrick Mahomes. We saw it with Russell Wilson. He won a Super Bowl.
It happened with RG3.
RG3, Dan Marino back in the day. I mean, you know, it has happened before. It's a dark horse move. But if he puts up 32 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, and throws for 4,300 yards, and the Broncos go 11-5, I think he's in the conversation. You?
Yeah, I mean, I would assume he'd be in the conversation doing that for sure, but that wasn't my question. My question was, what are your realistic expectations for him? I would say, personally, realistic expectations for Drew Lock.
Okay.
Between 25 and 27 touchdowns. If he gets over 30, it's a fantastic year. But realistically, 25 to 27 touchdowns. If he throws between 15 and 16 interceptions, I think we can win a lot of football games.
How about this? My expectations for Drew Lock are on the same par with Josh Allen. In his second year, he was responsible for 29 touchdowns, had 9 interceptions, and gave his team a fighting chance to make the playoffs, even though they came second in their division. And did make the playoffs. So how about that? How about Drew Lock is on the same trajectory as Josh Allen? Why isn't that fair?
I'd say that is realistic and easily attainable, quite frankly.
Okay, then that would be a great year. And then in what would be the third year, we're in the AFC Championship game. And wow. I'm right again.
Calling your shot, man. Point towards the stands. Call your shot.
Ring and Kevin. Wrap it up. Well, I mean, I do think that, like, James Barillat, not exactly the same as James, but I did hear what James was saying earlier, that this is a progressive year towards something better.
What, Derek Wolfe was the Devontae Booker of defense? That's what you agreed with?
James more or less took that back. He took that, to be fair to James on that.
Well, what about the Kyle Sloter is the Bradley Van Pelt of quarterbacks?
Oh, man.
You agree on that one?
I got to think about that a little bit because, you know, Bradley did make the team.
I agree. I agree with him.
How many games did Bradley Van Pelt even play in?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Oh, man. I'd have to go back and really, like, look at Bradley's, you know, everything. I know it was cool when Bradley was on the team.
In other words, he created a cult following without ever really doing anything.
It's a weird one because, like, I never thought really of Bradley Van Pelt of being much of a passer. He was kind of in that Tim Tebow mode. I think Kyle Sloter is a legit NFL passer. He played in 3 games.
He's looked pretty good with the time that he's had, no doubt about it. He's absolutely given his best with every single opportunity that he's had. I will definitely acknowledge
that.
Yeah,
I guess this is a more of a mystery to me. How does a guy play as well as he has? I mean, you say he's played for multiple teams, okay. But for all those teams, he's played well in the opportunities he's been given. So I guess my confusion is, what does it take to be entrusted to play with the ones or even the twos? Like, how good do you have to be? Or is it the fact that if the number – how about this theory? How about this for a little conspiracy theory?
What was he doing in practice? That would be my real question because I would agree that based off what he's put on film and games, you would think he would be on an NFL roster, yes.
Yeah, what about this? What about – conspiracy theory here, okay? Deep state conspiracy here.
I love this. You're really good at these.
GMs and coaches don't really want their third-string quarterback to look better than their backup and starters because it makes their decision to make them backups and starters look poor.
Well, that's a pretty moronic take. Well, I mean, seriously, you don't want the guy that looks better? Excuse me? Yeah, especially as a backup.
How do you think John Elway felt when he heard the media talk day after day about Kyle Sloter looking better than Paxton Lynch?
I think he was just mad at Paxton Lynch.
Okay. Do you think he was rooting for the third-string quarterback, Kyle Sloter,
to do better than
Paxton Lynch?
No, of course not, because that would mean that inadvertently he was rooting for Paxton Lynch to look bad. Of course he was rooting for Paxton Lynch to look better.
Right. So by that logic then, in a weird way,
That was a pretty unique situation, though, D-Mac, because you're talking about a first-round draft pick that was not your starter, right? Most teams, your backup QB is not in that category. Most teams, you're talking about Jeff Driskel type of guys, right? So you don't have any real investment in your backup QB. You've got it in your starter, for
why
sure.
Did the Broncos have so much enthusiasm for Brandon Allen?
Who says that they did?
Vic Fangio was the one guy he spoke positively about. Actually, there were two guys that he spoke openly to the media positively about. Brandon Allen and Garrett Bowles.
I don't know. I don't know, D-Mac, but I guess you're insinuating that they wanted Drew Locke to fail then. By your theory, you're saying that they wanted him to look better than Drew Locke.
I don't think they wanted Drew Locke to look better than Joe Flacco, do you?
No, not initially, no.
Joe Flacco was in his prime. We got rid of Case Keenum for him. We traded for him. We invested a lot of money for Joe Flacco. We took Drew Locke in the second round. We want him to look better than Joe Flacco? Really?
No, I'm with you, of course. I mean, they thought Joe Flacco was in his prime. They thought he was a three-year solution for him.
They weren't interested in Drew Locke, seriously.
But go back to your Brandon Allen one, because I definitely don't understand you on that one.
Well, I don't even understand the Brandon Allen thing at all. I mean, I don't get that top to bottom. I mean, I have no idea why.
They definitely did not want him to look better than Drew Locke, I promise you.
Well, why didn't they activate Drew Locke then?
That's not the question.
Why didn't they do it?
Well, they didn't think that he was better than him, but I promise you they didn't want him to be better than Drew Locke then.
But here's what I think happened. When Mike Kliss put out the story that Drew Locke was going to start the last two games of the season, I believe Kliss put that out there because that was the original plan. So it's not that they wanted Brandon Allen to look better than Drew Locke, but they had an idea of Drew Locke's development. Maybe it was along the lines of Patrick Mahomes, where Mahomes didn't play until the last game of the year, right? His rookie year.
Right, right.
So I'm not trying to crap all over Drew Locke or even say that they didn't like him. But they had a plan in terms of his development or where they thought they were on his development that really circled the last two games of the season, not the last five games of the season. So they wanted Brandon Allen to probably work out well enough so they could stick to that particular plan.
But you're twisting the entire thing. That definitely does not mean that they want him to be better than Drew Locke.
I didn't say that.
That has nothing to do with anything.
I didn't say they wanted him to be good enough. The plan was to start Drew in the last two games of the year.
This is all going back to your idea that a GM could want a third stringer to not be better than their backup QB. And that would never be the case. They just want the best available player as their backup QB.
But Tyler,
now, if you want to talk about the starter, D-Mac, that's a different question.
Tyler,
I do think you can protect a starter, but you don't protect backups.
Tyler, that is not my unique opinion today. That is being shared with me by other people.
By who?
And I'll leave it there. And we'll come back. And
you and your birdies.
Well, this is, hey.
Yeah.
Tweet, tweet. This is the Drive on the Fan.
Does your company make safety a top priority? Alliance Safety, Colorado's premier supplier of safety equipment, is here to help make it one. As an authorized distributor of 3M safety products and home to all pro gear, Alliance has a vast inventory of personal protective equipment designed to keep your workers safe, including fall protection, safety glasses, protective gloves, and gas detection solutions. Visit AllianceSafetyInc.net, call 303-388-8766, or stop by the Alliance Safety Warehouse off I-70 and Tower today to lock up all your safety needs.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive. Here's Tyler Palumbis and D-Mac.
All right, Tyler. It feels like moving and grooving here with bringing sports back. You know, in a bunch of different ways, we see that Texas wants to let people in, and I think Premier League is starting in mid-June, and it feels like they're closer to getting things going here on the NBA. What's your overall vibe with what's going on here in the country?
Oh, you know what? I told you the other day that I couldn't quite back it up, but I just had this gut feeling that we're going to watch professional sports this year with fans in place. And I feel even more strong about that right now. You know, baseball is a good example. They've got a lot of issues without fans in that building. Now, I understand it's got to be limited, but the TV deal is just not strong enough to support the league on its own right, you know? So they need people in that stadium. And with Texas opening it up, I believe that this is going to be exactly what happened when Arizona said, we're open for business, professional sports, let's go. Come on, bring it on. We got you. We'll house you. And the very next day, we've got Florida opening up business, right? And now all of a sudden it started to trickle down all over the place. Well, I'm not saying it's going to catch fire that quickly, that all these states are going to come out and say that we're open to having people in the stands. But I do believe that, you know what, that's going to create competition. That's going to create a little bit of concern for each and individual state. And all it takes is one to kind of light the fire.
Yeah, you know, it's it feels weird. I'm happy to hear or feel some positive progress. Meanwhile, the country is passing a 101,000 deaths because of the coronavirus. So there's a horrible, tragic landmark. But yet there seems to be a push forward. So It does feel odd. It feels like there's two, different forces at work here.
Yeah, I mean, look, man, I don't want to necessarily get into a battle of opinion on that part of it, but I'll just tell you this. I think that there is a very, very, very strong movement right now that people want to get back to life. And I recognize that, and I understand that, and I think that at some point the dam's going to break. And I just felt like a couple weeks ago we were going to have people in the stands, and right now I feel even stronger about it.
Well, we'll see where it goes. We'll see. Baseball right now, the thing about baseball right now is it feels like a financial thing more than anything.
Yeah.
And that's a little disheartening. But I don't think they have the logistics of it all figured out either. So we'll see. We'll take it on a day-by-day thing. What was clear, we talked about it yesterday. What was clear is there was no way. We said it yesterday before the Scherzer stuff came out. We said there's just no way the players are going to go for this.
Of course not. I mean, and that was just disgusting.
And sure enough, it almost felt like immediately after our show, Scherzer was like, well, not only are we not going to go for this, we're going to pretend you didn't even come up with it.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Like it didn't even exist. So, okay, fine. You know, that can't be what it is. There was just no way. We knew there was no way. And we'll see what is counter to that. We'll see where it, you know, the players were saying, what, 100 games? And, you know, that's an acceptance of basically doing some doubleheaders, things that, you know, you didn't see the players wanting to do initially. But now I guess they'd be okay if they won 100 games.
Well, I do
guess.
Find it interesting that the players are saying, we'll play more games. We'll play more games. You know, what is the real problem with that? Why couldn't they extend the season late into the fall?
Oh, they certainly could. Right? There's no reason not to do that.
So if the players are saying we're willing to work, we will work more so that we can get an equal prorated share, not necessarily a reduction in our salary, but just it'll be prorated equally, then we will work those extra games. That seems like a pretty fair compromise. And then on top of that, they're saying, and if you don't want to do that, if you don't want to play more games, if you're asking us to take another reduction after we just agreed to, well, okay, open up your books. Show us what it's going to be. The players have every right in the world right now to be upset with that deal. And at some point, the owners either got to open up the books or they got to figure out a way for the players to get their equal share of their salaries.
Yeah, so we'll see with baseball. Baseball is, you know, it's funny. People thought baseball was going to be dead in the 90s because of the strike. Because it was another financial thing, and it was, you know, the typical billionaires against millionaires, and, you know, forget about baseball. What brought baseball back was the home run chase between Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire.
Right.
But, of course, we know
now.
Thank
you, steroids.
Right. That was all fueled by performance-enhancing drugs.
Yeah.
Right? That's what brought baseball back. In fact, they're going to have, I don't know if you see this, but ESPN's now doing these documentaries on Sunday nights, and the Lance Armstrong documentary, Tyler, was one of their lower-rated 30 for 30s. In fact, the
I just saw that. It was, like amazingly low.
Yeah, it was lower than the Michael Vick 30 for 30, which was just a regular, before COVID-19, 30 for 30. It was just a regular sort of thing. And I get it. I think people are fatigued by Lance Armstrong. I think seeing some sort of let's have some sympathy for this guy thing, which I told you that's what that 30 for 30 was basically about. It was basically a let's look at Lance Armstrong from a sympathetic point of view. Okay? Because this is what happens when the star of the 30 for 30 allows access. And that's what Lance Armstrong did. He's allowing access. He's doing interviews. He's being honest about it and admitting his faults. But still, once you get so deeply embedded with the star of the show, you know, inevitably you're giving up some sort of creative control about what it's going to be and is painting him in a sympathetic light. Well, the public basically said with this Lance Armstrong thing, we don't care.
You know what? I haven't watched it yet. I am a little bit intrigued by it. I do sort of want to watch it. But for all the exact same reasons you just said, I have not felt the pressing need because there's nothing going to be revealed, right? Like if I'm gonna watch something like this, I want to learn something new. All it's going to be is maybe an apology tour, but for sure something that tries to kind of make America feel better about him.
That's what's going on with this doc. Now, I watched it. I told you I was a big Lance Armstrong fan, so okay, I was interested. And I'll watch the next one as well. I just love these kind of documentaries, period. You just have to take them for what they're worth, if they're worth anything. But anyway, one of the documentaries that's coming up, and it'll be interesting how they treat this, is following the strike and the Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire home run chase.
Yeah.
Well, I find that completely fascinating.
I do too.
And they both were cheats. And I don't know how they're going to. You know, you have not heard much from Mark McGwire at all, even though he's back into baseball and he's coaching, that sort of stuff. Like, what was the last Mark McGwire interview you can remember?
Yeah, I don't know. It's been a really long time.
Sammy Sosa's been more open.
Well, and Sammy's. He's also kind of, you know, he's like living in Dubai and he's got a weird lifestyle, and but he still talks to the media. He's still got updates.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, you would think by looking at him, because he looks so bizarre physically, he looks like a completely different person. You would kind of think his life is on tilt a little bit. It's not. Sammy Sosa is living, Tyler, like this incredible life to this day. Mm-hmm. So that should be interesting.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch that one. I just don't think that, you know, if it was Barry Bonds, and it was just Barry Bonds, they're just focusing on him alone, I think it would feel the exact same way as Lance Armstrong.
Yeah, because
I mean, he's just a villain, dude. Nobody likes him. Everywhere he goes, he was hated. It just, there's no love there. But those two guys, Sammy and Mark
America
McGwire.
America loved them.
Yeah, there was no hate for either one of them. You know, Barry Bonds was hated his entire career. And those two guys, they were going through that storm, and every single kid in America was watching it. You know,
I'm not going to lie. That was one of the most exciting summers. Every day it was this guy or that guy, and where are they at, and they're going to play against each other. And I mean, dude, I was so caught up into it. I was excited about it. It was so thrilling. Every single at bat that these guys took was like a can't miss moment. And that went for an entire summer. And then you find out later they're, you know, bunch of cheats and, you know, druggies and the whole thing. But then again, the same defense Lance Armstrong's documentary is using. Everybody was doing it, Tyler. So if everybody's doing it, you know, what's wrong with looking at the guys that did it the best?
So they took the most testosterone, or what are you saying?
Well, they got the most out of it. They were the best guys on it. Of all the bike riders who were cheating, and they all were, Lance Armstrong was the best of those guys.
That's a true statement for sure. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I'm ready to let all the steroid era into the Hall of Fame. I just am. It's just you got to judge them based on some sort of equal ground, and more or less, it really was equal ground.
I feel the same way. And I've always made the argument, listen, man, if we're making judgments on guys based on the historical reference of when they played, okay, because let's not forget that there was Babe Ruth didn't play against any African-American ball players, right? You know, there were periods of time in baseball, Tyler, that were embarrassing because of the way things were in society. But you don't see, you know, those guys not allowed into the Hall of Fame. And yes, it was an embarrassing period, the steroid era. But it's part of our history. It's part of baseball's history.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I wouldn't run from it at this point. You just kind of have to accept it. You have to note it. And you have to recognize the guys that were part of it. Or I think it's hypocritical to judge one era and another era you just give a free pass to.
Well, yeah, I mean, every era has got something of its own right, for sure. Bottom line is, man, I wish that we could have all of these guys that did something wrong just step up to the plate and immediately come out, but it doesn't work that way. None of us work that way. You wouldn't work that way. I wouldn't work that way. You make a mistake, and sometimes it just takes yourself a little bit of time before you can really step up to the plate and own it. After the fact, though, like – Lance Armstrong, he would have been one of the most beloved figures in America for a very long time, and it would not have been a big deal. It would have been a little blip on the radar had immediately he just stepped up to the plate and been like, yeah, I did it. Matter of fact, everybody does do it, but I did it. I did it, and I step up to the plate, and that's on me, you know? People would just move on.
Yeah, earlier today we brought this up as well with our Broncos insider, and we'll get to the NFL news here, but you know, we talked to Nikki Javala about this earlier. The Lance Armstrong docuseries that's going on, on the heels of the Jordan docuseries. As a journalist, what do you think about these documentaries about controversial or heroic athletes where the protagonist gets to have editorial control of the content of the documentary itself?
I mean, I love them as a fan. I mean, I thought The Last Dance was beautifully done. I think they got a lot of access, a lot of footage, and I thought it was really well done. But I always watch it, you know, in my mind, knowing that this is not the full story. There could be some things that are not quite right here. I find it not surprising necessarily, but the fact that they didn't interview his ex-wife or his current wife, that's a big deal to me.
Well, no chance he was going to allow that.
Oh, well, exactly. So there, you know, we're not getting the full picture. There had to be a reason, many reasons probably why he didn't want that. So with each one, it's you're not getting the full picture, but it is still entertaining. It's still great storytelling, and there still are some, you know, truths to a lot of it. But
this Lance Armstrong one's interesting because they're trying to paint him as sympathetic.
Yeah, no, thanks. Not buying that.
Not buying that on Lance Armstrong?
No.
Okay.
No.
Why don't you bring us up to date with two things. What the owner said yes to and what they said no to, and also the memo from Roger Goodell about protocols and NFL teams and how that impacts the Broncos.
Yeah, I'll start with the second one. So they're moving forward with kind of lifting some of the COVID-19 restrictions as more and more cities kind of reopen for business. So they did decide to extend the virtual off-season period another 2 weeks, but they did say that, you know, they expect within the next week that, or by next week, that coaches can begin to return to the facilities, they can open team stores. And the coaches thing is probably the biggest for the Broncos, but remember they have a 75-person limit across all, you know, for – like the Broncos have two facilities between their training facility and their stadium. So up to 75 people can be at both of those combined. And so the coaches, when they do return, they would factor into that total. So somebody would have to stay home if they were to go back in the building type deal. So that's a huge step for the Broncos and for the league as a whole, as they kind of look ahead to when players might be able to return and in what capacity. They didn't provide any details of when that would be, though they indicated in that memo that it would be fairly soon. But they're kind of all just awaiting word on when that would happen. But, you know, maybe they are capable of having a mini camp in some capacity or having some on-field time before training camp starts. For the Broncos, training camp would be July 28th is the first day. They're progressing, which is promising. And then for rule changes, they turned down the 4th and 15 that everybody was excited about. It sounded like it made some progress, but that was turned down. They did, which
did
I think
surprise
is,
you at all? I sort a little of felt bit. Like there was pretty good momentum for it.
Yeah, but last year they said there was good momentum and it got shut down. But yeah, I thought it was an interesting rule. I think there was a lot of pushback from those who thought they were getting rid of the kickoff, which is not entirely true. But so that's been next. One of the ones they did approve, though, was an increase of 2 to 3 players. So previous years they would allow 2 players to return from IR after 8 weeks. Well, they increased that to 3 players, which is significant. Last year, remember, there was always that discussion of, all right, well, if Drew Locke comes back, you know, at 8 weeks instead of 10 weeks, you know, we may not be able to bring this person back because there are a number of players on IR. So that could be significant, especially late in the season if you know, they're playoff bound and they need extra help there.
That's a good question. If that rule was in effect last year, does Drew Locke go on IR?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I would still think yes.
Yeah, if anything, it makes it easier.
You know,
it
would make it easier. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you can bring 3 back as opposed to 2.
A better example would have been Bryce Callahan. That would have been a better
example. I guess maybe I asked it the wrong way. If you knew you could put 3 guys on and you could bring them back, then yes, you would have put – Why put him on when you could put Bryce Callahan? Actually, the Bryce
Callahan
because
it would take up a roster spot if he stays on.
Right.
You know you can bring him back, so you clear up a roster spot to help other positions.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right.
So, what else? What else got shot down?
What else got shot down? I have to go back through the full list. But, well, some of the ones that the – I mean, the whole review on PI, that's a thing of the past. That was a pretty botched experiment. So that's gone, but they're adding, you know, they're expanding protections for defensive players. They're adding ways to prevent teams from manipulating the game clock by committing multiple dead ball fouls. I think those are the main ones, right? Am I missing?
Yeah, I think so. So, all right. I'm just laughing a little bit because all these players are having these workouts on their own anyway. They're all working out together, or they're working out in groups. And I mean, I get it. They're trying to be careful in state laws and all that. But most businesses are opening one way or the other. I don't understand why you couldn't have the players come back sooner than later to do something at the facility. To a certain degree, I think it'd be safer. I think
it's more for they want to keep the playing field even. So in states like Virginia and Maryland, where they're not allowed to reopen, you know, you let the Broncos return to the facilities. The Redskins, they're not allowed to go back yet because of the local ordinances. I think that's the biggest reason for a lot of these. You know, Texas gyms are open. I hear. I mean, I think land. Some training facilities are open to a certain capacity, but
hey, so with the announcement that Texas made today that they're they're going to allow fans at professional sporting events. What do you think? Some.
Yeah.
Well. First off, you can detail what that means, but then secondly, do you think there'll be any trickle down from that elsewhere?
Possibly. I mean, I think that's I'm curious to see what the Premier League does. They're the ones I've been watching closely because they're probably going to be the first ones to start back up in mid-June, right?
Yep.
But Texas basically said we're going to allow some fans up to, I think it's a 25% capacity, which when, you know, you should be able to safely distance in a stadium the size of Empower Field. But that's still a heck of a lot of people. We're talking thousands of people in a stadium that can fill 76,000. So Yeah, it could have a trickle-down effect. It remains to be seen if the NFL will actually have all that. You know, it's kind of up to them if they want to, you know, do that. And it only... It's just so hard to say at this point because you feel like things are moving so fast right now when everything was shut down. But, you know, are they willing to make that leap and kind of take that risk and let that many fans in? You know, a lot can change between now and September. The NFL has the luxury of time, you know, but, you know, we'll see how many. I don't think the Premier League is having any fans, right?
Well, it's just kind of crazy to think theoretically today is May 28th, right? We're 2 months away from the Broncos opening training camp, theoretically. All right, Nikki, we appreciate it. Thank you, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Good stuff.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right, great stuff from Nikki Javala, brought to you by Perry's Pizza from earlier. Thank you to Kevin Kistner, Richie Carney, Tyler, my man, riding with Ragnar. What's your adventure tomorrow?
You know what? I don't know yet, but I actually took a little new adventure today, and we'll see if I can find something else. Who knew that, like, in my backyard was a biker's oasis? Seriously, there are so many great places to go.
All right. Well, we look forward to all the updates back at 3, The Drive, tomorrow, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 104.3thefan.com.